Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling a really significant issue. What happens when a nation, well, pulls back on funding for science?
It's a huge question.
It really is. We're digging into an analysis by Jeff Bernard from the Econ Institute, specifically his article, Defunding Science USTDF.
Bernard's work, yeah.
Our goal here is pretty simple, but crucial. Understand the potential ripple effects of these kinds of policy decisions right here in the United States. We're talking economic, medical, social consequences.
A whole picture.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Bernard's main argument basically is that by letting America's scientific and technological lead erode through defunding,
mm-hmm.
we're putting our economic stability at serious risk. We could even potentially surrender our top spot in global science.
And what's really striking, I think, from Bernard's analysis is the historical angle he brings in.
Right.
It's easy for us now to just assume the U.S. will always be out front scientifically. But history, well, it shows leadership can definitely shift.
He looks back, doesn't he?
He does. He points to 19th and early 20th century Europe, places like Germany, the U.K. They were really at the forefront then. It's a reminder, you know, that dominance isn't guaranteed. It's not permanent.
Okay, so let's maybe start unpacking the economic side of this. Specifically, how defunding science could hit our innovation, our competitiveness overall.
Yeah, that's central.
Bernard makes this point, and it seems pretty fundamental, that historically, federal money going into R&D, research and development, that's been the engine behind some massive breakthroughs.
Absolutely transformative stuff.
Things like the internet, right? The whole fields of biotech, renewable energy, aerospace. I mean, that's foundational.
It really is. And if you connect that to our future economic health, the risk of defunding becomes, well, starkly clear.
How so?
When the government cuts back on funding that basic fundamental research, it sort of starves private companies of the raw material they need.
Ah, the groundwork isn't there for them to build on.
Precisely. They need those initial discoveries to then turn them into products, into services people buy. Bernard argues this vacuum opens the door for other countries. He mentions China, the EU, to jump ahead.
So they exploit the gap we leave.
Exactly. They can widen that innovation gap. Think of basic research as the fuel, you know, the fuel for the engine of commercial innovation. Without it, the engine sputters.
So it's not just like a slower pace of discovery in labs. It could have real, tangible economic consequences. What specific areas might feel the pinch first?
Bernard points to a few really critical sectors. AI, machine learning, they're set to change everything, right? Healthcare, finance, defunding could delay progress there.
Okay.
Then there's quantum computing. That's potentially revolutionary stuff. Defunding could stunt its development.
But keep it from reaching its potential quickly.
And also, crucially, clean energy. Less investment in research there doesn't just slow down our move to sustainability.
Which is important in itself.
Hugely important. But it also means we could miss out on what's becoming a massive global market. Other countries could dominate that.
Bernard uses this really vivid analogy, comparing cutting science funding to eating the seed corn. Can you unpack that a bit? Why does that resonate?
It's powerful, isn't it? It highlights this trade-off between short-term savings and long-term prosperity.
Okay.
You cut investment in fundamental science, the seed corn, and yeah, maybe you balance the budget this year, short-term relief. But you're undermining the very foundation you need for future growth, for future leadership. It's like eating the seeds you were supposed to plant for next year's harvest. Eventually, you've got nothing left to plant.
That really does make the stakes feel incredibly high.
Yeah.
Okay, let's shift gears slightly. Another big economic piece. The potential loss of high-skill jobs, and this thing Bernard calls talent flight.
The brain drain issue, yeah.
Where do these critical people, the scientists, the engineers, where do they typically come from?
Well, largely from our universities and our federal research labs, federal institutions. These are the training grounds.
The pipeline.
Exactly. They train the highly skilled workforce that really props up our whole knowledge economy. They're the experts driving innovation.
And when budgets get cut, these places, right. They feel it directly. Right?
Oh, absolutely. Fewer grants mean labs might have to shrink or even close. That means fewer opportunities in STEM fields, science, tech, engineering, math.
Right.
And Bernard suggests this can trigger that brain drain. Our best and brightest researchers, innovators, they might get lured away to countries offering better funding, better research environments.
Places like that.
He mentions Canada, Germany, China as examples, places actively investing.
That's definitely a worrying prospect.
Mm.
Bernard mentions a pretty alarming statistic, too. Something about a large percentage of U.S. scientists actually thinking about leaving.
Yes, up to 75%, according to one source he cites, expressing interest or considering leaving because of what they see as an assault on the scientific community. And he also makes the important point that many talented scientists working here are immigrants. They might be even more inclined to look elsewhere if the environment feels less supportive or stable.
So what's the knock-on effect if this talent actually leaves? What does that do to the economy?
It's a cascade. If our top minds go elsewhere, we risk seeing fewer new technologies, fewer new industries starting up here. Those innovative ideas take root somewhere else.
Okay.
It also hits our competitiveness directly. Think pharmaceuticals, biotech, advanced manufacturing, vital sectors. And ultimately, it could just lower the overall quality and expertise of our entire workforce.
Okay, so we've got less innovation, potentially fewer high-skilled jobs, and maybe our best talent leaving. Let's pivot to public health. How does defunding science there connect back to economic impacts?
Bernard really stresses the vital role of agencies like the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Yeah, everyone knows them from pandemics, but their work is broader, right?
Much broader. They're constantly tracking infectious diseases, looking out for public health threats, even dealing with bioterrorism concerns. It's all essential for keeping the population healthy and productive.
And if funding for an agency like the CDC gets cut, well, that feels like it creates a real vulnerability for everyone.
It absolutely does. I mean, look at COVID-19. That tragically showed us how a major disease outbreak can just paralyze things.
Yeah.
Massive disruption to labor markets, supply chains, consumer confidence, huge economic fallout.
And prevention is cheaper than the cure, basically.
That's what the data suggest. Bernard points to CDC's own figures. Every dollar invested in disease prevention can save something like $5 to $10 in future economic losses.
So cutting funding there is, well, it seems like a false economy. Risky.
It's not just a health risk. It's a significant economic risk. Absolutely.
Can you give some concrete examples? How does skimping on public health science lead to these economic shocks?
Sure. Less money for vaccination programs. You could see diseases we thought were under control making a comeback. That hits productivity, jacks up healthcare costs.
Right.
Weakened disease surveillance. That means we might be slower to spot the next outbreak, allowing it to spread further, cause more damage, cost more to contain.
Makes sense.
And cuts to public health programs generally, or research into chronic diseases that could lead to more people suffering from conditions that limit their ability to work, which again strains the economy and the healthcare system.
It really drives home how tightly linked our health and our economy actually are.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what about the environment? How does cutting science funding for, say, the EPA affect us economically?
Right, the Environmental Protection Agency. They're key for regulating things like air and water quality, dealing with hazardous waste, chemical safety, the stuff that keeps our environment livable.
And Bernard's argument is that defunding their science has economic consequences.
Directly. When their research capacity or their enforcement ability is reduced, he argues it leads pretty straightforwardly to increased pollution, environmental degradation.
And the economic costs of that pollution are?
They're numerous. You see higher health care costs from pollution-related illnesses like asthma. Reduced productivity, people are sick more often, or the environment itself is less productive. Even things like lower property values in polluted areas.
These aren't just abstract environmental issues. They hit the wallet.
Exactly. They have real, tangible financial impacts.
He also brings up the insurance industry in this context. How do they fit in?
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. Insurers are increasingly factoring climate change and other environmental risks into their calculations.
When they set premiums and things.
Right. When they assess risk and decide how much to charge, ignoring the science, letting environmental damage continue, that just leads to higher insurance costs for everyone and potentially more instability in that whole market. It increases the risk profile.
Can you give a couple of specific examples of environmental damage translating into these higher economic costs?
Well, think about the rising healthcare bills for respiratory problems linked to air pollution. That's a direct cost.
True.
Or consider lost workdays, disrupted businesses due to more frequent and severe extreme weather events. Floods, storms, heat waves, which science links to climate change.
Right. Huge disruptions.
And then there's the sheer cost of property damage, especially in coastal areas dealing with sea level rise and stronger storms. We're talking billions of dollars. Science helps us understand and prepare for these risks. Cutting it leaves us more exposed.
It really paints a picture of a lot of costs that might be hidden at first glance. Let's move to another area: critical infrastructure and even national security. How does defunding science touch that?
People often think of agencies like NASA just in terms of space rockets, right?
Yeah, moon landings, Mars rovers.
But their work is much broader. They're absolutely critical for developing and maintaining GPS systems.
Which we use for everything now.
Everything. Navigation, logistics, finance. Then there's weather forecasting technology. Hugely important for agriculture, transportation, disaster preparedness, Earth observation satellites, monitoring climate, resources, even cybersecurity applications.
So cutting budgets for these science-heavy agencies, the ripples spread wide.
Very wide. Weakening these foundational scientific capabilities can hit key sectors, hard agriculture, energy, transport. It can even impact military readiness.
Oh.
Well, disrupting supply chains, increasing operational costs, maybe making us more vulnerable in certain ways. Ultimately, it can touch on national security. Bernard also notes that even the private space industry, like SpaceX, relies heavily on foundational tech developed by NASA over decades.
They build on that public investment.
Exactly.
What are some specific ways this weakening infrastructure might actually show up in our daily lives?
You could see maybe more frequent glitches or disruptions in GPS. That would be annoying for driving, but could cripple logistics or financial systems. Less accurate weather forecasts could mean bigger losses for farmers or leave communities less prepared for storms.
Right.
And reduced Earth observation could hamper how we track wildfires, floods, droughts, things we need to monitor and respond to effectively.
This all seems to be building towards a bigger, maybe longer-term problem.
Yeah.
A potential slowdown in our overall productivity growth.
Mm-hmm.
How does defunding science feed into that?
Okay, so long-term economic growth. Fundamentally, it's driven by improvements in what economists call total factor productivity.
It basically means?
It's essentially how efficiently we use our resources, labor, capital to produce things, getting more output from the same input.
And science drives that.
Technological advancement is a primary driver of productivity growth. And where does tech advancement come from? Scientific research. New discoveries, new innovations let us do more, better, faster, cheaper.
So the logic follows. If we cut back on the science that fuels those advancements, what happens to our long-term economic picture?
Bernard argues pretty forcefully that sustained defunding of science will just inevitably mean fewer big technological breakthroughs down the road.
Fewer game changers.
Exactly. And that translates pretty directly into slower overall economic growth. GDP grows more slowly. That can lead to stagnant wages for a lot of people.
Mm.
And potentially increased income inequality because the limited gains from slower progress might only go to a smaller group at the top. It can ultimately mean a lower standard of living and fewer opportunities across the board.
Could you give us a feel for what that slowdown might actually feel like for an average person?
Well, you might notice your wages aren't really keeping up with inflation year after year, even if you feel like you're working just as hard.
Okay.
You might see that gap between the richest and everyone else getting wider.
Yeah.
And it could just become harder for people to climb the economic ladder. Fewer new high-paying industries and jobs being created because that engine of innovation is slowing down.
Bernard actually tries to put some numbers on this potential damage, doesn't he? He builds a model.
Yes, he does. And it's a useful way to try and grasp the potential scale of the impact, even if it's inherently predictive.
What are the basic assumptions he uses?
He starts with the current level of federal R&D spending, which is roughly 0.7% of GDP.
Okay, not a huge slice, but significant.
Right. Then he incorporates this idea of a multiplier effect. The thinking is that R&D investment generates more economic value down the line, maybe 2 to 4 times the initial amount spent.
Right, the payback.
Exactly. And then for his model, he considers a hypothetical but significant 25% cut in that federal R&D funding.
And he projects this out over time.
Yeah, he looks at a time frame of about 5 to 10 years for the main GDP effects to really show up. And he uses a baseline U.S. growth rate of around 2% per year.
Okay, so let's walk through the numbers. What kind of potential hit are we talking about according to his model?
Okay, so starting with the U.S. GDP, around $28 trillion in, say, 2025, that 0.7% R&D spending is about $196 billion.
Got it.
A 25% cut to that is roughly $49 billion less per year. Now, apply the multiplier. If you use a conservative 2x multiplier.
That's $98 billion a year in lost future GDP.
Around that, yeah. And if you use a more optimistic or maybe pessimistic, depending on your view, 4x multiplier.
That doubles to nearly $200 billion a year, $196 billion.
Exactly. Lost future economic activity every year.
And that adds up. What's the cumulative impact over, say, a decade?
Over 10 years. Using that lower 2x multiplier, the total hit to GDP could be around $1
trillion. $3 trillion.
And using the higher 4x multiplier, it balloons to potentially $2 trillion in lost economic output over that decade.
Those are staggering numbers. How does Bernard help people wrap their heads around that scale?
He tries to contextualize it. He says that potential loss means that in 10 years, the U.S. economy could be anywhere from 2.5% to 5.5% smaller than it otherwise would have been.
Okay.
And to make that real, he says it's like experiencing a mild recession every single year for a decade.
Wow.
Or another way he puts it, it's like losing an economy the size of Texas. That kind of comparison really brings home the sheer magnitude of what could be at stake.
And he cautions that even these huge numbers might be leaving things out.
Absolutely. He's clear. His model mainly captures the direct hit from reduced innovation. It doesn't really factor in other massive potential costs.
Such as?
Well, think about the economic cost of a future public health crisis that we failed to prevent or respond to quickly that could be trillions.
Right.
Or the escalating costs of climate change, damaged storms, droughts, sea level rise, which some estimates put at hundreds of billions per year and rising.
Okay.
Plus, a smaller economy means less tax revenue for the government. And potentially, if our technological edge slips, we might even need to spend more on defense just to keep pace. So the true cost could be even higher.
So after laying all this out, what's Bernard's final take? He sounds pretty concerned.
He is. He's quite blunt, actually. He says, defunding science is like burning down your factories to save on electric bills.
That's a powerful image.
It is. His point is, yeah, you might get some short-term budget savings, but you're fundamentally wrecking the engines of long-term wealth creation. You're damaging health security, global influence, everything.
And the future he sees, if this path continues, it's not a rosy picture for the U.S.
No, he paints a picture of a U.S. economy that's smaller, yes, but also one where people are sicker because public health is weaker, the environment is dirtier, and our ability to innovate has faded.
Letting other nations take the lead.
Allowing other nations to seize that scientific and technological leadership.
He wraps up by calling it, what was it, economic self-sabotage.
He does. He really stresses that cutting science funding undermines the foundational systems that our prosperity relies on.
Yeah.
And he points out, interestingly, that historically, supporting science hasn't even been that partisan. Even conservative thinkers often backed it because the return on investment was just so high.
So from his perspective, this isn't really an economic decision.
He frames it as political, short-sighted, and ultimately just really perilous from a purely financial standpoint for the country's future.
And for you, the listener, I think the takeaway here is that these high-level policy decisions about science funding, they aren't abstract. They have really broad, real-world consequences.
Absolutely.
They impact economic growth, yes, but also job opportunities, the quality of your health care, the health of the environment you live in. These are things that directly affect your well-being and, really, the future we're all heading towards.
Couldn't agree more.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into Jeff Bernard's analysis, the main message seems pretty clear. The defunding of science, as he outlines it, carries potentially huge, far-reaching negative consequences for the U.S. economy, for medical progress, for society's overall health.
And maybe a final thought for you, the listener, to chew on. What are the real long-term trade-offs when we prioritize perhaps immediate budget numbers over these sustained investments in knowledge, in discovery? What kind of future are we actually building, maybe inadvertently, if we lessen our commitment to science?
It's a really crucial question to think about. We definitely encourage you to explore this topic more and think critically about just how vital science is for our society and our economy. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.